Good afternoon. Welcome to Open Credits. Oh, Jesus. Open Sources 12 on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca. Turn back the clock, start again. Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz from Ontario News Now. No, just kidding.
Oh, dear.
We could change the name of the show, but not to Ontario News Now.
No, it seems that's taken.
It seems it's taken.
Yeah. That's
taken. Open Credits isn't, though. So
they're surprisingly...
Open Credits is good.
Yeah, Ontario News Now is surprisingly friendly to the new government.
Oh.
Yeah, it's weird.
Anyway. Might talk about that one day. But, yeah. Open News Credits.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today we'll talk about the municipal election here and in other places across the province. Which places almost had no mayor's race at all? Which municipality has two white supremacists on the ballot? We'll have all the answers. And then the nuns are rebelling. An AP report featured some startling information about what's life like for the Sisters of the Faith, and it looks like they need some Me Too support, too. When will the Catholic Church ever learn? And then finally, owning the libs is a thing, and one commentator on CBC Opinion thinks that's okay. But is it really okay? I think we know the answer. But first, Doug Ford, who's just been so awesome so far in his first month.
Just giving her. As we say in this province. Giving her.
That about sums it up. Last Friday, he was giving her to municipal politics. And he made an announcement. Just a great announcement that completely changed the rules of several municipal elections just 4 hours before nominations closed, announcing what's been called the Better Local Government Act, which is so Orwellian. It's, I mean, way to hit the nail right on the head, Premier Ford. But
it's going to be better.
Yeah,
I
so
promise.
Basically he canceled four regional chair elections in Peel, York, Niagara and Muskoka, and shaved about half the people, or shaved about half the seats for Toronto City Council. Right now it's 44. It was going up to 47 after a review that I think was completed in 2016. And then now it's going to go to 25 with the BLG Act passes, and there's no reason to think it won't pass because Doug Ford has 70 seats in the Ontario legislature, which is a majority.
Free BLGs for everybody, yeah.
I almost wish it was a sandwich. But I mean, I think here's how I phrase it. If he wanted to come out and say, I think we need to look at the way municipal governments operate. I think there are too many layers. So we're going to start a review process with the intent that we're going to make local government smaller and leaner. I'd like to see half as members of city council, and I'd like to get rid of the regional chairs because I think government has... we have enough government oversight, and because I'm a conservative politician, I think less government is more. And we're going to get this ready for... the 2022 election. I don't think anyone would have... I think there would have been some surprise because, again, this is something he didn't campaign on. But I think people would have went, okay, well, we'll see what happens. But that's not what happened.
Yeah, I mean, there would have been some griping, but at least there would be a bit of a lead-in.
Yeah.
But instead, this is like in the movies where somebody goes into the room, drops a grenade, then kind of walks away and everything blows up behind them, right? The famous scene. Just walking away and it's like, yeah, boom. It is definitely, it's probably more than a grenade. It's like smoke bombs and tear gas at the same time. Incredible. And you know, the reaction, of course, is understandable because it's... There's lots of things, but the fact that it's in the middle, like, the campaign's essentially on.
Yeah.
Comments were made that, like, there's people that have spent money on signs, have already got started, and that's like, well, now they have till, at least in Toronto, September 14th, I think, to decide what ward they want to choose and if they're going to run at all. I guess that includes withdrawals. But he really has just sort of just tossed this thing out there. And the regional chairs, too, of course, as we know, I don't know if we mentioned it about Patrick Brown. Patrick Brown was going to run for the chair of Peel. And I saw one report that said he was a contender. I'm like, are you sure about that? That aside, it almost seemed as if Ford was shutting that down. Now, if I understand it right, it was the Liberals a couple of years ago had initiated this. It was going to be elected chairs for regions.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, most people don't really pay much attention to regional government or chairs. It's just kind of there. And I know in Mississauga, I remember for years we're talking about just getting rid of the regional government and running it as sort of Mississauga, Brampton, Caledon or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the possibilities because, you know, up the road in Waterloo Region, one of the possibilities they might be looking at is amalgamating KW and Cambridge into a mega city.
And there'll be six seats if Ford has his way. No, I don't.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. That would be the number if we're to match something, everyone for the provincial and federal ridings. You'd have a city of 750,000 people with, you know, seven council seats. I mean, that's Edward Keenan pointed that out in one of his columns, that if you want to be a councillor in the full in the mold of Doug Ford's late brother Rob Ford, in terms of like being direct, sort of doing retail politics and answering constituents, that's going to be pretty hard to do when you have 116,000 constituents. A little bit easier when you have 11,000. Mm-hmm. But when you add 10 times the number of constituents, you're not going to have, like, the next Rob Ford isn't going to be able to go out and, like, personally fill all the potholes or put up the stop signs, which is, like, the things that made Rob Ford popular, which just goes to show you that Doug Ford doesn't understand municipal politics. And that's something I personally have a problem with, that Doug Ford is talking about, this government is, he literally said that Toronto is the most dysfunctional, Toronto City Council is the most dysfunctional government in the country.
Oh, wasn't the world?
Which, you know, there's 444 municipalities in Ontario alone.
Mm-hmm. There's got to be one little one somewhere.
There has to
be
one at least more dysfunctional. But also, if Doug Ford was so concerned about the functionality of Toronto City Council, why didn't he want to stay there? He bailed the very next election. He missed 30% of the votes. His last year in office, he missed 53% of the votes. This is someone who hated municipal politics, but now he feigns to know exactly how to fix municipal politics.
Yeah, and is there a little bit of bitterness there when he, he ran for mayor against Tory and came in second.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it seems like there does seem to be a bit of a vindictive edge to it. It's like, I'll show you.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it's not just him. He must have the backing of the party. And as you'd said, you know, there's a way to do this. He'd be like, well, we next time. But maybe that's too wishy-washy. Maybe he wants to be Mr. Now, it was saying that they never actively campaigned on this, but he's putting it under the efficiency banner, right? He's saying, we campaigned under that we're going to improve. It was something like improve efficiency. I can't remember the exact phrase, but it's like
make government more efficient.
Make government more efficient and save the money because they're spending like drunken sailors. That's his other one. And the other line that's hilarious, that he spoke to tens of thousands of people and every single one of them, everybody he ever spoke to said the Toronto City Council was dysfunctional.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Everyone across the province has an opinion about Toronto City Council being dysfunctional.
You know, you could even expect, hey, Doug, I loved your brother and you guys. But no, it's everyone said, you know what? City Council is dysfunctional.
Doug,
tens of thousands.
My hydro bill is so high. Our roads are crumbling here in Caledon. We desperately need a new hospital. We need more money for mental health and addiction services. But first things first, you cut that Toronto City Council in half. They are so dysfunctional. Yep. It's ridiculous.
It's so true, though. He just doesn't like them. Now, of course, it got chippy in question period. Very chippy in question period.
And Doug Ford sucks at question
period. And he does. He has his own...
He thinks he's making
shtick.
A stump speech every time he gets up. And he gets cut off by the speaker.
I think there's lots of coaching going on there. But there's a great play-by-play on it by Paul Wells in McLean's, if you want to see a little bit more on that. But yeah, and he referred to like what Ford always talks about as the fantasy consultation, that he just kind of like, I talked to 3 million people and they said this.
It's strange, though, that he counts that as consultation, but for sex ed, we have to
talk to
everybody in the province.
Yeah.
And seems like there's something a bit disproportional about that, you know, for the sex ed curriculum, which is one part of the overall health curriculum, which is one part of the overall school curriculum. We have to talk to more than the 4,200 people who were interviewed by the people who wrote the original 2016 revision of the sex ed curriculum. But I've talked to hundreds of thousands, millions of people on the campaign trail. It's just to radically alter Toronto City Council less than 100 days before an election. That seems incredibly disproportional.
And they keep digging up that bit about the, one of the people that helped write the curriculum was a sex offender. It's like, well, whatever.
I'm not sure how much that guy was involved.
No, and that's what most people would say, but they keep harping on about it.
Yeah, they found the one. But the other thing is, to look at it from the other side, which is the Toronto City Council side, what a weak reaction. I can't believe, the weak reaction.
We're going to sue. We're going to do this.
It wasn't they want to have a referendum. Like, let's have a referendum. And if the province doesn't want to hold a referendum, then we'll ask if we can do a referendum ourselves. And it's just like, are you kidding me? That is so limp. That is such a limp response.
Yeah.
And then a candidate for Ward 13, or what was going to be Ward 13, Eglinton Lawrence, actually filed an injunction. So it took a completely outsider, a guy who was running to be on council.
He's a lawyer by trade. I think his name's Rocco Achapong or something.
But the solicitor's going to come back. I think it's on August 20th. The city solicitor's going to, about what the options are. But that seems so weak. Instead of, John Tory, and, maybe he feels he doesn't have the authority, or maybe he thinks maybe Doug Ford's partially right. I don't know. But, instead of saying, city solicitor, you go down to the courthouse right now and you get an injunction on this. Mm-hmm. File the injunction, because this is putting a lot of stress on the clerks and the people who run the election.
Oh, yeah.
It's putting a ton of stress on people who are actually taking the time to run. And as we'll talk about in our next segment, in some places it's hard to find people to even just run.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, to just completely flip on this, as something is going in process, it's not just bad policy, it's bad, decision making.
So I was going to say, we should also mention that it involves, you're speaking of schools there.
Yeah.
It involves the school boards in Toronto as well.
Yeah.
Their boundaries have been redrawn, and they're even more shell-shocked. They're like, well, what schools are in this zone? What do we do?
Right.
It's this big, what the hell are we supposed to do?
Right, because the school board seats are tied. Like here in Guelph, there's two trustees that represent Ward 1 and 5, two trustees that represent 2, 3, and 4, yeah. and then one trustee that represents Ward 6 on post.
The lines are divided differently, and of course across the four school boards. But there is one option that was discussed somewhere, that the feds could get involved. It seems as a federal power that hasn't been used since the 40s, since the war. here's a new one for you, folks. Disallowance. And I didn't really know about this, but if the federal government feels that the province is overstepping or there's something wrong in municipality, they can play the God card, as they're allowed to under the Constitution, or I guess at that point the BNA Act, and say, no, you can't do that. But I haven't heard Trudeau or anybody chime in on this. Have you?
No.
Anybody at the federal level? They probably said, just stay quiet because we got that carbon tax thing to worry about. So,
well, I mean, yeah.
But they could. I mean, think if that was an option, that Tory and company would appeal to the feds and say, look, is there anything you can do for us? So, but then, of course, you'd never hear the end of the...
Well, I think Tory probably doesn't like the visual of going over Doug's head to Trudeau.
Mm.
And I think probably from the federal side, the government doesn't want to be seen as riding roughshod over the provincial government either.
But if they really, really wanted to save it, they could.
Sure. But I mean, I think it could start with Toronto City Council. And then you had 9 city councils, including Mammal 80.
Oh, boy.
Going on. There's this is a great idea. Why? Because they think they're probably going to be spared.
It's Mammal 80, Ford Jr. there. Francis Nunziata, the usual suspects, right?
The usual suspects.
Is Ford
right.
Jr. What's his name? Michael.
Michael Ford.
Mm. Formerly.
But I mean, they think they're probably going to be safe. I think Michael Ford, could run against a cactus and would, or maybe that's a bad example, but Michael Ford could run against Jesus and probably still win Etobicoke.
It does mean that, say right wingers will be running against each other and left wingers. Conceptually, I think the idea is to get rid of the, let's call them the NDP element in Toronto.
Right.
Leighton Jr. And, you know, you name all the progressive councillors. I think the idea is to thin that herd.
Right. They want to overturn the really strong representation of the core Toronto, Toronto proper, before the mega city, because I think the makeup would be like 9 councillors who represent the old city of Toronto, and there would be 16 councillors who would represent the donut around it, which is the Scarborough and your Etobicoke. And I think Doug likes those optics more, because then you don't have people in city council trying to make a case for bike lanes and LRTs and smart city growth and parkland and all
Ferris
that other
wheels,
stuff.
Yeah.
Just roads everywhere, subways.
Because contrary to popular belief, Toronto didn't overwhelmingly vote for the Conservatives. I keep hearing this. It's like, yeah, they voted over. No, they didn't actually. That is another story, though.
Well, I mean, there are some PC reps from, like, again, the suburban areas. But most of downtown Toronto is either Liberal or NDP.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. But that's, yeah.
So we're going to punish them. Not us.
So the nominations did close in most places, and some at least one person who was running for a regional chair had to quickly find a way to keep his comeback going. Because Scotty mentioned Patrick Brown, who suddenly decided that his ambition is to be the mayor of Brampton.
Yeah, he's like I did some work there. It's like, I worked in Brampton too, but I'm not going to run for mayor.
That was hilarious. Why do you want to be mayor of Brampton? And he's like, my dad practiced law here, and I practiced law here too for a while. And it's like, really? You represented Barrie for Ottawa for like 10 years. You had a business.
He went to Shoppers World once, and then it was like, oh, okay,
yeah,
I can do this.
I've been to Shoppers World a couple of times too. I go through Brampton all the time when I take the train to Toronto. Come on, I know it like the back of my hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's galling. Like the naked
looking
ambition
for redemption
of this is galling. Like, I had a story of redemption. I was coming back. And apparently, like, there was, when he went to Brampton, like, there was somebody who leaked that said, like, he was also looking at Mississauga too, which makes more sense, because I think this woman who's now his fiance for some reason works in Mississauga, so that's why he was. I mean, that's just bizarre. Like, he gets thrown out of the party, out of office for you know, sexual harassment, and then 3 months later he has a fiance. It's like, oh my god, wow.
Yeah,
but,
whole nother thing. But yeah, he does give off that he's trying too hard, for sure.
Yes, he's trying.
I gotta
too
run
hard.
For something, because you know, I didn't.
He had
it.
A story. It was a comeback. He'd been falsely accused. Everyone betrayed him. Pushed him out of the front door. You know, he was almost in the premier's office, and then CTV like came out of the dark and put a hood over his head and threw him out of the back of a limo. And
hit him with a bag of nickels. Yeah,
back outside the Barrie city limits, and he was like, "No, sir, you do not get rid of Patrick Brown that easily." And so he got an Uber and he went all the way back to the GTA
to Brampton,
and he was going to be peel chair. And I don't know how that race would have turned out. It seemed to.
Well, and the race that's canceled now. Who else was running?
Can't even remember.
Yeah, it's like people. It's not even on the radar, and then it was on the radar because of this, and now it's off again. I guess because it's just not going to happen.
Right, and so now he's going to run for mayor of Brampton. He's probably going to lose because Linda Jeffries,
who's the
current mayor of Brampton, was elected last time replacing Susan Fennell, who was massively corrupt.
But also popular up until the corruption came to light.
Yeah, that's what put a pin on the corruption.
She was like, she could do no wrong until she really, really did wrong.
Right. And so, you know, so Linda Jeffries probably...
has gone.
In so much as she said, like, you know, mayor of Brampton is a consolation prize, and I think that probably sums it up nicely.
She said that? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I also wanted to talk about how we have 2 white supremacists running in the city of Toronto to be mayor, because Faith Goldie threw her hat in the ring before nominations closed, and then I don't know why, like, her and James Sears are going to split like the neo-Nazi vote.
James Sears is your ward news, right?
Yeah. So,
God, when will these people ever learn? They won't.
It's just so funny because this is a week after she lost PayPal and lost Patreon. So she needs like a new revenue stream. So I guess it's going to be running for mayor.
I won't use the word that Vice used to refer to her, but just put in Faith Goldie Vice and read that article because it's really good. They won't even say her name.
No,
they
and
use
a
this
lot of
disparaging phrase because it's like, you know, we don't even want she's here. You need to know about this, but we're not going to talk about it.
And it was so funny because I was watching CP24 and I had Twitter up and Andre DeMace comes up on Twitter and he's like, it's like, don't even say her name. Don't give her the time of day. Don't call her a conservative commentator, which just like kind of puts a shine on what she actually is. And then no less than 2 minutes later, CB24 is like, we're here with conservative commentator Faith Goldie. And I was like, great. You just did everything Andre DeMace didn't want you to do. And I've seen that in a couple of places, like controversial conservative commentator. It's like, no, she's a neo-Nazi. She went on the Daily Stormer
the 12
podcast.
Words and all that.
Yeah, 14 words.
14 words.
Yeah.
And, of course, another fash candidate news, Paul Fromm, back from the dead, running for mayor of Hamilton.
Yeah.
Paul Fromm, well-known white supremacist. Stormfront, what else we got? He backed Ernst Zundel.
Yeah, he did.
And you think of anything that's in that realm, he's made an appearance. He's recently moved to Hamilton from Mississauga. I think I can't remember when he ran for mayor of Mississauga, but I believe that he did and got probably like 8 votes. His main concern is traffic. So he says. So, yes. Traffic's really bad. And poverty, too. Poverty and traffic. So I'm sure he's got some kind of unpalatable spin as to why
I'm sure
the traffic.
He was told in a
poverty
focus group.
Sure. I know what the cause of that is in his mind. Traffic, I don't know. Maybe it's Korean cars. I really don't know what is. I sort of want to hear, but at the same time, Hamilton, I completely sympathize. And Toronto, too. I'm so glad we don't have that problem.
Well,
here in
one
this
thing
town.
I will say is that, we have two mayoral candidates here in Guelph.
Thankfully, somebody else chimed in because nobody should be anointed in my book.
No, and Alan Pickersgill.
Unless it's a white supremacist running against you, then fine, you've got the job.
Yeah.
So, just in my opinion.
Alan Pickersgill, I thought, had a really good blog post about, you know, why this might be a fun election to watch for the mayor's race, to have like a two people, you know, young versus old, man versus woman, you know, practical versus idealist. It could be interesting, we'll see where it goes.
And we're hoping to have both of them in, by the way, before election day.
Yes, of course.
That goes without saying, really.
Yeah.
The other 37, I don't know, but it could be a challenge.
It could be a challenge. Among the 37, though, Carl Wettstein is going to be retiring, which is too bad because Carl's always fun. And Andy Van Hellemond is also retiring, even though he filed his papers a couple of weeks before. But on the close of nominations, he withdrew a couple hours beforehand, and I'm not sure why.
Citing the more time with the family thing.
Yeah. Well,
he's now 70.
It's understandable.
Not being ageist or anything, but, he said it himself that, you know.
Well, I mean, that was, and Liz Sandals was 72.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the magic.
You're right. That could be the magic.
Churchill,
number.
But, I don't know.
that's some comparison.
And,
okay.
Carl Wettstein was, he sort of had a little bit of an exit interview there in the today talking about how projects are taking too long. And we should do that, I guess. So maybe we can try. Mm-hmm. Get him in and see he can have a word on that, because it was interesting what he was saying. And then there's some Back to the Future stuff with Hamtak running Ward 4 and Lise Burscher coming back in 6.
Yeah,
taking another run at. Now, if I got to write, I guess wasn't Hamtak part of the let's call it the Kate Corey wave? I don't know if it was aligned with her, but it was that election.
Yeah,
and he was just around for one term, right?
In Ward 6.
Yeah, so that is interesting.
I don't know.
I really don't remember.
Maybe he lives in Ward 6 now, but I don't know. But it's funny that
owns property there. That's the other.
It's funny that it's funny that Christine Billings, who was counselor for Ward 6, now in Ward 4. Peter Hamtak ran when it was Ward 4, now running Ward 6. So it's a funny trade. The Ward Shuffle.
I'm gonna run over here now.
Another interesting thing, Phil Andrews, former managing editor of the Mercury, is running for the Wellington Catholic District School Board.
Oh, I missed that somehow in the long, long list. So.
Yeah.
Has he run for anything before?
No, no. I don't think so. Hmm. And then one of the saddest races, though, is the Ward 5 race. Not that we're, like, actively hoping Councillor Spiper or Downer lose their seat, but, I mean, it is sad that, I mean, the Ward 5 seat always seems the toughest to get people to campaign for. I think this is, like, the second election out of the last three that there's only been three candidates.
Yeah, and Alex Green, who ran before.
Yeah,
right?
he ran in 14.
Yep. So, same ward? No, different.
No, you ran in Ward 5.
Same ward, yeah.
Yeah. It makes me a bit sad. That, I mean, not as sad as Woolwich Township.
More candidates. Yeah. It's like there's some singles, right? There's like, yeah, they just got the job.
The mayor has been reacclaimed, yeah. And one of the ward councillors has been reacclaimed, and there's only a race in Wards 1 and 2 there, which is, you know, that does make me sad. It was almost, you know, there was almost nobody running for mayor of Vaughan and Markham. Everyone running for mayor in Vaughan, for mayor of Vaughan and mayor of Markham, including the incumbents, filed in the last 2 days.
What happens in that instance? We should find out. It's like, say no one files. It's possible, right? It's entirely possible.
I'm sure it's there,
like,
in the Municipal Act.
But considering how big Vaughan is, somebody's going to run. Hopefully it isn't like some clown or fash.
Well, no, the incumbents ran, but, and I didn't have a chance to look up the candidates, but I think there's like the three candidates in each, like, but everybody filed in the last 2 days, including the incumbents. It wasn't like here in Guelph, where the mayor was the first in line on May 1st.
Yeah. And just deeking back to Toronto for a sec, it's interesting that Jennifer Keesmaat, the ex-city planner, is running for mayor.
Well, she was, I mean, like a lot of people, she was driven by, she did an interview with the Star where she's like, she was driven by the fact that John Tory was looking like, even though John Tory's was running against 20 other people, it was looking like he was going to be running unopposed in terms of, like, serious candidates, quote unquote, yeah, serious candidates, not like the Faith Goldies and the James Sears.
Yeah. So an actual race as opposed to the, although, yeah, it's, Toronto's always interesting in that there's at least, it's generally 20. All these people, sure, chime in. Did they lower the bar for the deposit? Isn't that what happened? There was something happened, and then all of a sudden, and I guess a lot of people trying to get their issues across, like your ward news or whatever, but let's just not talk about them anymore. I know it's going to come.
Wish.
Something's going to happen. I know
I
it's
wish,
come
but
up.
I mean, it's,
we can't not talk about them, I suppose.
I mean, as we're going to indicate, as we're going to talk about later in the show, there's kind of like a cottage industry of just horrible people who are in it to
get some mayor time. Me.
Yeah, basically. I mean, the frightening part is that, you know, Jill Warmington was the one who, you know, was announced Faith Goldie had filed her papers, and, you know, Jewel Warmington, whatever you want about him, he writes for the Toronto Sun, which is one of the primary news sources for the city of Toronto, you know, which seems to indicate that, you know, maybe Sun is starting to go full Nazi, which is something, you know, remember Faith Goldie was someone who was fired from the Rebel for being too extreme.
Did she not write for the Sun? What was her paper? Who was,
I think
she was
on Sun News.
Because, yeah, because she, well, and if I understand it right, she had started out, now she was a right winger, but she was like incredibly clever, let's say, like well educated, you know, lots of schooling, and then something happened.
She was a pretty young thing that said conservative.
Well, there
stuff,
was that so too, she, no, but she, you know, she had, I think she like won some awards and whatnot early on. I don't know if there were awards that people created. Again, we're spending far too much time talking about her, but the fact she's in the race will be a factor. And any last, like, things for people to watch before we go to break?
No, let's go to break.
Let's go to break. We need a break.
We're going to go to break and then come back with Catholic stuff and owning the libs. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. Demos, constructos, the process needs more cops, though. Cops on horses, cops that use force on folks in the core that look too poor. Harassed daily, the classes face a hooray for this revitalization. Make way for capital, about half of your homes are gonna have to be resold. 2 to 3-fold to the rich new people, to the cycle that starts to repeat in the downtown cores just for the elite. Controlled by price, controlled by police, all made to crawl.
Lee Reed from his new EP available on Bandcamp called The Steel, S-T-E-A-L, City. A little spin there because Lee Reed is from Hamilton. And he managed to touch on like every single gentrification thingy in that song. So in a mere 3 minutes and 28 seconds. So check it out. It's on Bandcamp under Hamilton Tenants Solidarity Network.
Cool.
I love Lee Reed.
That was a good beat. Yeah, I like that. I hate talking about this, but it's, you know,
it needs to be talked about
because I think it's a little too under the wire because, I mean, the Me Too news this week had to do with the guy who runs CBS TV, Les Moonves. But I think the bigger Me Too story of the week is this, where the AP, the Associated Press, did a big story about nuns who are abused. And they talked to nuns who are in Africa, Asia, South America, Europe. And there has been, you know, in so much as the child sex abuse in the Catholic Church had been sort of under wraps for years, there's also been, it looks like, maybe not an equally big abuse scandal, but still a pretty big abuse scandal involving nuns who have been, some have been raped, some have been harassed, some have been abused. And it's, of course, been done by Catholic priests. And, I mean, some of these are just, like, horrible stories. A group of nuns came out in Chile that they have been systematically abused for years by priests and also by other nuns who are pressuring them to be quiet and to, you know, not say anything. There was a nun in, I can't remember where, but she went to confession 20 she went, maybe not 20 years ago, but she went to confession and hasn't been back since, because the last time she went to confess, she was raped by the priest because she was confessing to something that had happened 20 years earlier, something that she was not proud of in the sexual realm. So, this seems like a pretty big story that is beginning here, that the nuns are now having their Me Too moment.
Yeah, and it's getting a bit of coverage from inside the house, let's say. There's a Vatican magazine called Women's Church World, which I've never heard of, but it was mentioned in a related article that brought this up. But the massive problem with all of this is that the response is always the same, and you see it in, let's just say, closed and large religious communities. The same thing happens with the Jehovah's Witnesses. Vatican officials said, regarding all this, he said, it's up to the local church leaders to sanction priests who sexually abuse sisters. No, it isn't. In my opinion, it's up to the law.
Yeah.
But they're like, well, it happened in confession. Well, if you're going to get assaulted in confession, then, like, what the hell? Excuse the language, I guess. But, you know, what's seriously, like, it does. There's no logic to this. Now, there was an abuse case just recently, Theodore McCarrick, priest from New Jersey, he was actually ended up a cardinal, worked his way up the ranks, convicted of abusing kids accused of abusing kids and adults, just abuse everywhere. Pope Francis accepted his resignation, but nothing's going to happen. He's been told to live a life of prayer and penance, like that's going to fix it. And of course, the testimonies of people in the court are like, okay. What do you have to say? And one person, all they said was, I hate you, and on down. So it's like the court is doing one thing, and then the church is like, oh, he should live a life of prayer and penance. No, you have to address this, and you have to fix this. And I don't think they can. I honestly don't think that the Catholic Church or religious institutions of that size can fix it. And the long history that they've had too. And you had mentioned child sexual abuse, indigenous people, Christian Brothers in Newfoundland. Right. I mean, you name it. It's systemic, and you can't get rid of it without nuking the whole thing, in my opinion.
Let me come to the defense of the Catholic Church or something.
Okay.
I hope I haven't
offended anybody, but I mean, you wonder why people are leaving, you know?
Right. I think, but the Catholic Church, or at least the Catholic doctrine isn't to lower the boom on people. So to say that you can't be a cardinal anymore and you need to spend the rest of your life praying and thinking about what you did and being forgiven is probably as harsh as you're going to get, while still like maintaining the philosophy and the belief of Christ. And I think we can't underestimate, because there's been a lot of talk in Me Too about making sure predators pay the price. But, you know, there's still room, I think, for restorative justice. And, you know, maybe I'm just thinking about our old friend Cardinal Law, who was kind of patient zero for this, who when it came out, and that's, of course, what Spotlight was based on. Cardinal mm-hmm. Law was the head of the Archdiocese of Boston when it was revealed in the famous Spotlight column that was fictionalized in the Academy Award-winning movie. That,
great film, by the way.
Yeah. Yes, it is. He knew for several years that there were priests abusing kids. And when the heat got turned on, he resigned from the Archdiocese. But what happened to Cardinal Law? He got a fancy-schmancy promotion to the Vatican, where he stayed and where he continued to be in a position of influence until he passed away, either earlier this year or last year. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which. But so for a priest to be told, I accept your resignation, now go and think about what you did, is miles apart from what happened to somebody like Cardinal Law, who is definitely guilty of keeping the system afloat, of just recycling terrible priests through different parishes once they were caught. It's so, you know, there's also other signs of hope. There's a Catholic church in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, that released the names of 71 people, 37 priests, 3 deacons, 6 seminarians, 9 from other dioceses, and 16 members of the community there who had been accused of sexual abuse.
This is one parish.
This is one
about.
Parish since 1940.
Well, still.
This is like it's an 80-year period, but you're right. Still,
no, but it perpetuates itself, though, right? The cycle right. continues,
right?
Like, and that's an how do
and
you
that was one parish, and it's ahead of like a almost 1,000-page report that's coming out from the grand jury that's looking at the 6 archdioceses of Pennsylvania, which is going to apparently release at least a partial list of 300 names from 6 dioceses of priests and other people involved in the Catholic Church who have been accused of things in the past. So, I mean, like all things with the Catholic Church, it doesn't move as fast as you like or as anyone would like. But, I mean, there are some indications that things are changing. But, of course, it can move faster. I'm not saying that. And take it from someone who was actually inside a Catholic church last weekend. Some changes in the Catholic Church aren't necessarily better. I, an atheist, was one of 3 people in that church in a suit last Sunday. It was my niece's christening.
Okay, it's one other thing. It's either a wedding, a christening, or a funeral, right? Those are the 3.
Sunday morning, I got to get my butt to a Catholic church.
Yeah.
But I was one of 3 people in a suit. Most of the men there were in cargo shorts and golf shirts. So
that's a thing. Isn't it? Was it a wedding? It was the same thing. It's like who? Like I don't know.
I was
maybe
at my
we're
sister's
a bit more
grad here 3 years ago, and there yeah. are people in cargo shorts and polo shirts and things. I was like, it's a university graduation. Dress up a little. Goodness. At least put on a shirt, a college shirt, and some khakis. Wear the alt-right uniform.
That's our next show. Open credits is going to be a fashion analysis
credits.
Of people. It's going to be like queer eye with straight guys who like, why are you wearing that? Yes. So that was the sort of lighter note on a very heavy story here.
Yeah, yeah.
But oh my goodness, I don't know where to go from
well,
there.
The problem with this is that the
Catholic Church and the Vatican will pass this off as if it's local. It's like, oh,
right.
it just happened here, just happened here.
Right.
Well, in the countries, that's India, Chile, Uganda, Italy, Canada.
Right.
You know, it's not just, oh, there's a few people here and there. It's tons of people. It's hundreds of people.
Which is the problem with the excuse that it has to be handled locally because it's a global phenomenon.
Yeah.
You can't handle something locally and have local remedies when it's clearly a systemic and institutional thing.
Yeah.
And also, this is the same issue with, you know, what happened in the military or what's mm-hmm. been happening in the U.S. military with or even here in Canada in the Mounties, you know, where the system is justice is administered in the system itself, or the complaint in the administrative systems is in the system. So there's really no privacy. There's really no opportunity for anonymous reporting. And someone who's going to be investigating this is someone who could, you know, just as easily turn around and punish you. And that's exactly what's been happening, is that the typical excuses, you know, they were asking for it. That nun who was raped in the confessional, she was asking for it because she was confessing to something sexual that happened decades earlier. She was asking for it by titillating this priest. None of the responsibility, though, is, of course, to put on the priest, who also take oaths of celibacy.
Broken time and again. Yeah. I say shut her down and the school board. That's just my opinion.
Let's leave the school board.
Oh my God, the hate mail is being written right now.
At least in this one. And then the only other point I'll make is that it's kind of utterly rare for, like, once you are a cardinal, that's like one step below Pope, because the Pope comes from the College of Cardinals. So it's been exceedingly...
Not a real college. Anyway, yeah. Yeah.
No, it's not a real
college. I know. I'm just saying.
It's been exceedingly rare
make that point.
For... cardinals to lose their position, and the last time it happened, it was like 5 years ago in Scotland, where there was a priest who had stepped down because of allegations. He kept his title. He lost like the rights and responsibilities of cardinal, so like he couldn't participate in the election of the next pope, for example. But he kept his title, and he kept like the finery and the vagaries of being a cardinal.
Did he go live in a rock like Luke Skywalker? I don't know.
Like, I don't know what happened to him, but I mean, people still call him cardinal. So
I'm sure the people in the neighborhood didn't call him
that. To lose the title, again, it seems like a small thing, but in terms of how the Catholic Church operates, it's a pretty big deal, because they've tried to hang on to even the worst people, because, like you said, they are losing people.
He would have had to hide because we Scots don't mess around.
Right, anyway, because the most jarring part of all this is that... some of the priests who attack nuns, obviously there are sometimes pregnancies and can't walk around having a pregnant nun. So what do? They go
get an abortion. Hypocrites all.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of hypocrites.
sorry.
Alan Rickards, who's a privacy lawyer from Toronto, but for some reason given a platform on the CBC Opinion website, wrote an article... That's trying to make a case that owning libs is a pretty good political strategy that Canadian conservatives should emulate, because, you know, people see them as uptight and inaccessible. So, you know, doing memes and stuff and just, you know, owning the lib, which is, I found a pretty good definition of owning the libs. Where did I write it down? Anyway, I'll find it, but you keep talking.
Yeah, so this came out of something that Nikki Haley was speaking at a conference.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations.
Yes.
Nikki Haley.
Yes. I was going to assume people
Trump
knew
appointed,
her, yeah,
by the
Nikki
way.
Nikki Haley, you'd know her because she goes to the U.N. and does exactly the opposite of what the rest of the whole U.N. does. So this was a weird conference. It's some kind of – and I'm not sure why this guy is even touching on this. I can sort of see why. At high school, like high schoolers, 4 days of conservative. Who's conservative in high school? Like
yeah,
three people.
That should be the first question to get answered.
And it sounds like Jeff Sessions and Trump himself are going to be guests at this conference. So this is pretty wild. So they're trying to begin. Yeah. If Trump recycles the Boy Scout speech, I think.
Well, this is the one where Sessions, he went there and they started chanting "Lock her up." This was before Nikki Haley's speech, but they started chanting "Lock her up," and Jefferson Beauregard Sessions took part in the chant, and he got rightly grilled over that.
So Nikki Haley's saying,
"Lock up
kids,
a 7-year-old grandma from Long Island."
Kids take the high road. I think she's trying to say that you're trying to be. Trying to be hip, I guess, by joining the meme.
Well, yeah, that was her point. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, you should try and, I thought she'd say she should try and be a leader rather than just sort of these cheap shots or whatever. But that's, I mean, and she does sort of have a point, because, you know, when we do things like me, and I'm saying we because I was like guilty as some you are as well.
Don't lump me in with you.
No. Okay. I will admit to sharing memes, but not to the degree that Trump does. In fact, Trump shared the one with him with the Trump for president on The Simpsons, right? So it's like he's a champion of this style. But I mean,
which aren't friendly sketches to Trump, yeah. By the way.
No. But I mean, realistically, you're sharing that kind of stuff with your peer group, not necessarily. Nikki Haley's confusing it a bit and trying to say that, you know, how are you going to essentially convert people, I guess, to your, you know, right. are you going to persuade, you should use the power as a persuasion. Right. The old-fashioned way where it's like, let's sit down and have a conversation. If you've seen any political conversation online, it starts off sort of okay, and then it turns into this like, you're a cuck or whatever. Like, the stuff right. just comes out. So I don't think there really is any way to have that, you know, the deep conversation, unless, you know, you can read the long read of whatever as much as you like. But in terms of having a dialogue with people online on any of the formats, I don't think it's possible, right? It's just not.
Well, the original piece itself was confused because he was talking about how Obama had the you know, hope and change sort of expression to some of his campaign. Hillary Clinton had, you know, stronger together. Which aren't really memes or political slogans, but he was kind of conflating the two, that, or at least saying that liberals are better, like, summing up their message in a couple of words, and the way that now, I guess now conservatives are summing up their message is with the meme culture and the troll culture, which is not the same thing. So I did find that definition, by the way. It's blatant self-sabotage for dumb political reasons, which I think is an elegant definition. And that was from a Rolling Stone article. Because I think the problem with this owning the libs culture is that it's kind of self-defeating. Rick Wilson, who is a never-Trumper, a Republican strategist, he said... in that same Rolling Stone article, it's about replacing philosophy with trolling, and this is not necessarily a conservative thing, because the whole thing about conservatism is supposed to be about substance and being wonkish about policy and being smart about policy. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of not what trolling is. Trolling is like, ha ha ha, you dumb lib. You want health care for all. You're so stupid. And David Frum, in that same article, also made the point that you have liberals out there arguing for, at least in the United States, arguing for universal health care, arguing for, you know, more compassion for immigrants and things like that, like big idea
poverty,
things,
housing,
right? And conservatives don't really have any big ideas other than owning libs, which seems to be the only reason to do anything now. There's no way to counter the big ideas on one side when you have no ideas on the other side. So what does it become about? It becomes about the culture war.
No, and it's kind of spiraling out of control. Because, well, I mean, and what you were saying there about the phrases that people have, I was thinking about Michelle Obama. I don't think it was mentioned in the article, but her big one was, when they go low, we go high.
Right.
So that's her way of saying they're going to take the high road. But there's weird stuff going on now in what should we call it, meme troll land or whatever. About and I was just reading about this morning about some sort of conspiracy involving Q.
QAnon, yes.
QAnon. I don't want to get too much into it, but I think when you're reliant on meme culture and these sort of bite-sized ideas spreading stuff, that's when you get this conspiracy crap.
Yeah.
And people go down that rabbit hole, let's call it, and it becomes like, yeah, there's a worldwide conspiracy, man. I mean, it used to be conspiracy theorists used to be kind of a limited thing, but now with the internet, it's like, the people that believe everything, well, from Obama's birth certificate on, which was perpetuated by the head
the current
of state.
President of the United States.
That's when it gets to the point where you couldn't have any rational, philosophical or otherwise discussion about politics, left, right, center, or whatever, with those people because they're in that zone, right?
I'm glad you made that connection too, because I made it. Because the whole thing with the QAnon is that there's this massive conspiracy where Trump and Robert Mueller are doing this public fight over collusion while secretly working together behind the scenes to disrupt the deep state and Hollywood liberal elites who are all involved in this worldwide child sex trafficking
ring. They're all
pedophiles, yeah. And including, up to and including, Hillary Clinton and Tom Hanks.
And Tom Hanks, I heard that one.
Tom Hanks, who is hired to play every nice guy, real life nice guy. He played Sullenberger in Sully. They've hired him to play Mr. Rogers in a Mr. Rogers movie. That Tom Hanks.
He's the worst human being.
He's right. In QAnon world, he is like Skeletor meets Blofeld. But he plus child sex trafficking. But Because I don't think Skeletor was ever involved.
Didn't a lot of this come out of, is it 8chan? I've never had the pleasure of checking out 8chan, but it's like...
It's the evil twin for 4chan.
4chan is bad enough, and 8chan is like, you thought 4chan was bad? Well, we're going to take it into the toilet, go right down into the sewer.
Speaking of memes, 4chan is to 8chan, what... Or 8chan is to 4chan, basically, what Hold My Beer is. It's like, you thought 4chan was bad, hold my beer. Here's 8chan.
I love how you used a meme-y thing to talk about memes.
But it's true. But it's... But I mean, the own the lib thing is the ultimate... Or QAnon is the ultimate expression of owning the libs, because now we've tied all the libs into this massive conspiracy of just, like, pure unadulterated evil. And it's a place where, like, reality can't penetrate, and people are coming up with their own, like, sort of counter realities because of it. And I wonder, you know, what happens in 10, 20 years where people have, like, grown up in this own counter reality. It's not even people. It's not even young people. I mean, there are plenty of old people wearing QAnon gear at that Trump rally the other night. And I saw somebody online point this out, that it's so weird that, you know, you and I growing up probably heard from our parents, don't believe what you see on TV. And don't believe what you read on the internet.
Yeah. Or don't believe everything.
And now it's
been
flipped with the parents now believing what they read on the internet and what they see on Facebook, all this QAnon garbage and all this like trolling and memeing and stuff and the Sean Hannity crap. And
like I said, because it used to be rare. Somebody who was into conspiracies had to really work at it. And then those, you know, people, let's say, you know, Bigfoot or Area 51 were sort of common.
Right.
But there was sort of a sense of, like, I want to say humor to it, whereas now it's like
it was always aliens.
Aliens.
Aliens
was the
pyramids.
Conspiracy for years, like from the 50s. It was aliens, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah.
But it was kind of like...
But then it's changed with, like, the trutherism and 9/11. And I want to say, we're not unsusceptible to this in Canada. And I think you only need to look as far as Canada Proud, which is teeing up for the federal election. Mm. I mean, Ontario Proud, at least it... In the beginning, how it sold itself was like a critical sort of voice of the Ontario government. And yeah, they did some kind of despicable things, but everyone was in agreement that they weren't big fans of the last Ontario government. But now they're teeing up for Trudeau stuff. They're posting articles from the Nectarine, which I'm reasonably sure is also owned by the same people that do Ontario Proud. They want to. I guess they think it looks like that maybe they're two separate entities, but I'm reasonably sure it's from the same people. Anyway,
in the words of Fred Flintstone. Oh, boy. Anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's leave it at
what
that.
What a place to leave it on.
It's like Fred a meme almost, really. I'm gonna make it when I go home. I'm gonna
make that meme.
Yabba dabba do. So that's the end of our show for this week. Just a reminder, Lloyd Longfield is going to be here in IRL with us on August the 16th. And you can stay connected to us on our website, opensourcesguelph.com. You can go to Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And you can hear this and other episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can find me on Twitter @AdamADonaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. And Adam, could you write something for CBC Opinions, please?
I think
you should. I honestly think you should. Because if that guy can do it,
if that guy
you
can
do
it, anybody
can.
Can.
I think it pays.
I do write my opinions every week for Guelph Today.
True enough.
Which you can read tomorrow.
You should recycle one, send it to CBC, get $1,000 and
cool.
Run away.
I'll run away on $1,000. Sounds good. I'll run away to Kitchener, I guess. DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour, or at least a rerun of DJ Sounds Good to Me is. And you're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back here, of course, next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources. We'll see you then.
What? Who's outside? Yeah, come here.